Welcome to Mac Break Weekly. I'm Renee Ritchie, filling in for a vacationing Leo Laporte. And big news this week, in advance of Apple's event, the invitations are out, but we've also gotten our first sneaky peeks at the new iPhone and the new Apple Watch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 626, recorded September 4, 2018. It's complicated.
Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Tres Pontas, premium quality extra virgin olive oils shipped directly to you from the Casablanca Valley in Chile. Visit trespontas.com/macbreak and use the code MACBREAK. You will save 20% off every bottle of olive oil in your subscription. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval if you're in the market to buy a home. Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly. While Leo is away gallivanting across Europe, eating his way across Europe, I believe, he's left us here to play. And that includes our rock, our foundation, Andy Iannacco. How are you, Andy?
I do feel like a block of cold, immovable granite today. Thank you very much.
Also joining us in playing the game once again is it real or is it a render? Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core.
I'm coming to you via VR. You know, that's the only way that it works for me anymore. I just have to.
Alex's pixels look better than our atoms. It's appalling. Also joining us, one of my favorite people in the tech world because I get to work with her every day, Lori Gill from iMore. How are you, Lori?
How's it going? Glad to be back.
This is such a fun show because
I need to be wearing a hat right now.
You could. You could totally.
Well, that's because your hair looks halfway decent.
Oh, okay. You got it?
This isn't an affectation. This isn't style. This is like, I cannot do anything. I've got only 4 hours after I get up on a Tuesday to get something going on with my hair. And at the last minute, hey, how about a hat?
I feel your pain. And, you know, I think like maybe women don't really realize that the hat is the solution to that problem. Because, well, I have bad hair days all the time and I never think put on a hat. I think go fix your hair. So yours is much easier.
Look what it did for Cicely Tyson. Everybody's talking about that absolutely wonderful hat.
I just
no one's talking about her hair. Yeah.
The Boba Fett helmet, I think, would do me well. It would have a good hat and a good face day. It would be awesome. So the invitations are out. I think Apple probably waited till we were finished the show last week to send them out, just like always. But they did go out. They have been received. It is as widely suspected as I think we talked about for several weeks. Going to be on Wednesday, September 12th, because September 11th, the Tuesday day, is akin to a Memorial Day in the U.S. So the 12th makes a lot of sense. Now, the invitation confused some people right out of the gate because it was a circle. And that led to all sorts of internet, social, blog, YouTube, podcast speculation that, oh my God, we're getting round watch faces or a round phone. Or no, this is the logo for Apple Park. It is literally the ring building at Apple. It is on all the t-shirts at Apple Park.
I was imagining Ultimate Frisbee at the Apple Park, which would be outstanding.
Marques Brownlee would win, though. I mean, you would MKBHD would just win, so it wouldn't be fair. But no, it is the Apple Park logo. But they do say gather around. Andy, do you have any tea leaf reading on this? Is this just Apple being cute, or are they going to start putting us squares into round pegs?
No, I think that they're just talking. I really do think they're talking about AR. I think they're going to be talking about because we're not looking forward to any really huge revelations in the new iPhones. I really think that most of the hardware discussion is going to be about, hey, here's how good this is for AR, and hey, here's how many more objects we could render, and hey, here's how we've reduced the lag. And particularly, hey, look how expensive all these other augmented reality devices that are only for developers are. And yet we're putting the power and the glory of advanced augmented reality in your hands.
I thought this was actually something that Alex and Tony Stark built in a cave out of scraps, and it'll be the new source of power for all of Apple's gadgets.
I actually thought that now if they're giving away anything, and I think we all have to preface this by saying that I will credit you, because I think you're the first person to actually articulate this, that people, the graphic designers at Apple, are laughing and laughing and laughing at everybody just dissecting this image. But the thing that came to mind was that it is a ring, but it is copper. And I was thinking maybe it is a Qi charger charge ring.
That,
and maybe
exactly
we're going to actually see the
thinking
new charger. Yeah.
Just going to ask, does anybody know what a Qi charger, like the actual hardware, looks
the coils?
Like? Yeah, the coils, because that seems like it would make sense. I have a wireless charger on the bottom of my cup that actually looks like the invitation. So like,
it's the new Apple Watch.
That comes to my mind.
Or maybe gold, like, because the phone is going to be gold again. Could that be a hint? Just how, and not based, we'll get to that in a second, but based on some of the images we're seeing, it's not champagne gold like the early iPhones. It's not rose or blush gold like the subsequent iPhones, but this is full on Cardassian and Kardashian style
Nouveau Riche gold.
Yeah,
it is like Trump gold. It is. You can't buy class, but you can put gold leaf on it. Yes.
And as the Bruins fans will attest, it is black and gold. Finally, what is the Pittsburgh team, Alex, or the Pennsylvania
gold
team?
Pittsburgh. Yeah. The Eagles are silver and green, but the Steelers are black and gold.
So is this something all Steelers fans, all Bruins fans have been waiting for Apple to finally get on the right page?
Finally, they found their way to the right place. It took them some time. We can forgive them. It's Apple. So
there's the picture. 9to5 Mac scored this. Some people, again, I love everybody in the Blogger YouTube podcast community. Some people thought these were marketing images leaked by Apple to generate buzz. You can only suspect that if you know absolutely nothing about Apple. There is no universe where Phil Schiller and Greg Joswiak were anything but apoplectic about
somebody is on their way home.
somebody realized that if I want to quit, but if I quit, I don't get unemployment insurance payouts. If I get fired,
no, I don't. I mean, I think that they'll obviously, however it got out, there'll be a lot of. I'm sure that there'll be lots of meetings and discussions and how do we never have this happen again. I don't think anyone probably lost their job over it, but
there
I'm
was
sure
some speculation because. Guillermo Rambo from 9to5 Mac, who I believe found these images, he was watching. He also managed to find one of Apple's early test broadcast streams from the event. But that was showing old stuff. That was showing like the air power from last year. They don't test it with leaks, with our marketing images of unreleased products. That's just not how they go. So it's possible that Apple for years has been doing sort of security through obscurity, where they rely on people not knowing the names for URLs that are on publicly accessible web portals, or even slightly publicly accessible web portals. And you could sit there and type things in and maybe get a match. And because there's only two images, it's not like they found every marketing image that's going to be coming up on the event. It's interesting, but they did get out. And Lori, the thing that shook me at first was that the images, which I believe is Jupiter on the top of these, they make it look like a very short lava lamp or a very humped, but it's not really, that's just the wallpaper on the phone, right? We're not going back to a rounded iPhone.
Well, I mean, that kind of brings up the question of naming. I mean, maybe we're going to change iOS 12 into iOS Jupiter. Start giving our mobile software names the way we give our Mac software names. Right.
Weren't there like a couple versions of macOS minor updates that were named after the children of Greek gods, like Deimos and Phobos, which are also moons, I think, or Loki, something there. So these images got out. We're looking at the phone. Andy, iPhone XS, iPhone XS, tennis. I think Snell said tennis, and I can never unsee it.
It's U.S. Open week.
What do you think? I mean, it's an obvious name in hindsight because they've been using product name S as their cycle for years. But I thought maybe once we got to Roman numeral 10, we'd be beyond that.
Yeah, it's weird. I think it's a reflection of the difficulty that Apple has in competing with Android in one particular way. That is to have a diversity of hardware and a diversity of price points out there. Apple is the only company that's making iOS devices. They're the only company that's making iOS phones, which means that they really have to be able to anticipate everybody worldwide and what they want. And so last year, I was pretty surprised that they basically, I can't remember how many phones they actually canceled last year, but it seemed as though everything down to like the iPhone 5 was still on the price list. Like, yeah, they were trying to make sure that no matter what, if people don't have the extra $50 for the iPhone 7, don't worry, we'll sell you an iPhone 6. So I think they're coming to a point where they're going to have a more standardized name for a way to communicate people to make it really, really clear what kind of a phone this is. I'm really, really pleased if the rumors that we're looking at appear to be true, that they're going to be giving the market a version of a version of last year's iPhone 10, only with like less by saving money where in places where people aren't really going to notice, like by switching out the stainless steel frame for aluminum, switching out OLED for LED, and letting people have something that is almost as great as last year's iPhone 10, but let them have it for like iPhone 8 or even iPhone 7 or 6 prices. So that was my favorite part of the rumors that we're hearing for now. I love the idea of having a humongous phone because I still use my iPad mini. Even though it's, oh my God, does it feel so slow running the modern operating system? Because there are times where I need something that I don't even have something the size of a small sheet of paper to carry something around in. I really do need something that is either more discreet or that I can just toss into a jacket pocket. So I love the idea of having a 6.5-inch phone, but really it is the idea of, as always, making the best technology available to people who don't necessarily have the money for what is now the luxury phone budget of $1,000.
Well, I'm still stuck on the name, though.
Opposite of you, I actually prefer the 4-inch phone size. So I'm wanting the iPhone 10 body and hardware in a 4-inch form factor. So that's why I would love the low cost iPhone 10 style thing as well, but I want it to be smaller, not larger.
Yeah.
So I want to get to the iPhone 9 or whatever Apple calls it hasn't leaked yet, but this one did, and I'm confused by the branding, Alex. When they first leaked last year, Steve Troughton Smith famously leaked the firmware that had iPhone X or 10, and we didn't know which way they'd go, and they ended up going with 10, like Roman numeral 10, which I don't think is human readable anymore. People see X, and it would have been easy to do, okay, iPhone X and then X2, X3, X4. It would have given them a decade of product runway, but instead we went with 10, and now we have 10S, which is tennis, and people will read XS, which is excess, or access, or exes, because you're in Petaluma. And I, from a branding point of view, Alex, I don't know where to go from here.
I actually don't either. I think we might end up with, you know, the next year being iPhone and then just 11.
iPhone, you know, like 10T.
I think it'll just be 11. Like, I think they're going to turn it. And I think that their marketing, see, forget the rumors for this year. Let's talk about the rumors for next year. You know, it's going to be round. The whole phone is going to be round. It's going to be like a puck. That's really what they're moving towards. And it's just going to be, it's going to be a big dial and says, turn it to 11. So, yeah, that's going to be the marketing.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is no iPhone 9 rumor. Like, we see the 10 in this, the 10S, sorry, and the 10S Plus, whether they call it that, or there's just two sizes of iPhone 10 now, the way they're just two sizes of iPad Pro, and there's no iPad Pro Plus, which would be nice because simplifying, Apple used to be famous for simplify, simplify, simplify with two of the simplifies crossed out, and we're getting a little bit complex. So it'd be nice to reduce. But to Lori's point, Apple, the lower cost model here is in between. It's not smaller than the iPhone XS. It's in between the iPhone XS and the iPhone XS, quote unquote, Plus. And to me, that's because I think in emerging markets, in places like Asia, in China, even, you know, some places in North America, people aren't buying small phones the way they used to, and they're replacing primary computing devices with phones. Like Andy wants to go out with just his iPad mini, and a lot of people just want to go out with their phone, and so they need, or they have to, it's the only thing they can afford, that's their only piece of connected technology, and they just need it to be as much of a surface as possible. And that really does beg the question, is if the entire market is moving big, which I think the Android market did years ago, are small phones a niche? Is an iPhone SE not going to come out? Will it come out in small order batch form in the US next year? Lori, do you feel just left behind?
I do feel left behind, but I'm not giving up completely just because there's been so many SE2 rumors about that. It makes me think that there is something on the horizon. It may not be what I want, but it might be a continuous upgrade of the 4-inch form factor, not for low cost entry level sake, but for that small but loud group of us who prefer the 4-inch form factor. So I think it's going to keep happening. I just don't think it's ever going to reach the spec level that the premier phones are. So we will always feel trailed behind when it comes to whatever the new model is going to be, I believe. But I don't think they're going to just sunset the 4-inch form factor completely.
Yeah, and just, it's always worth remembering that large phones are inherently sexist, because which slightly greater than 50% of the population wears clothes that do not have big pockets? There's your answer. So I think it's important.
I used to think that
for companies like Apple to make a smaller one.
When you go to Asia, the smallest people, women or men, the smallest people are using the hugest phones. Like, they were Galaxy Note adopters before I think anyone in North America, just because they were mostly wireless infrastructure. They didn't go wired and they didn't go desktop PC. And those things became their sort of first introduction to PCs. And they wanted the stylus and they wanted the giant screen.
Well, and I think that also when you don't have an iPad or some kind of tablet, the phablet makes a lot of sense, because it's going to be kind of this in between thing. So if you have that slightly larger form factor, then you might want something smaller that's more compact. Whereas if it's the only thing you're using, I know that people send me PDFs and I'm like, oh, I need to open this on my iPad or my computer. I can't read it on my phone. So there's definitely, you know, from those eyes, I do have to admit that I have an SE one of my international phones, and I just love being able to throw it in my back pocket and not think about it and have it as this tiny little phone. I definitely miss it, but I don't, on a day-to-day basis, I do like the slightly larger screen.
Dalrymple throws his iPad mini in his back pocket. That's how you got to roll.
That's the sexism of clothes. I have my tactical pants have back pockets that can fit an actual full-sized iPad into.
Wow.
Don't want to bend over too far.
I know that the problem is my wife puts hers in her back pocket all the time, and I'm always like, that you're going to sit down and break that phone. You know, like and she's got the 8, and so I'm always like, you're gonna break the phone. You know, like, you can't, and she never does, but I'm always like, oh, I can't, you know. And so with the little SE, I've never had that feeling. Like, it's just so compact, you feel like you can do whatever there. And so with the iPad, kind of the, you know, I just, my iPads are bigger. I have the Pros, and so I don't, you know, we have some minis, but they've gotten too slow, so we don't.
There was a picture on Twitter over the weekend of a woman who put pockets into her wedding dress, and everyone's saying how clever and how amazing it was. And I just kept going, please don't make that for the phone. Please, I hope that's not just for the phone.
I'm sure it was.
They're paying $3,000 for a photographer, but they still want to be able to take those selfies wherever they are.
Yes. All right. So going back to Andy's point about the less expensive phone, 6.1 inches. It looks like it's going to have a single camera, an LED LCD display, not an OLED display, but it's going to be the same. Rumor has it, it's going to be the same kind of display that LG is using, which is a very advanced form, 100% DCI P3 display gamut. And Apple's going to be able to fold it underneath the way it does OLED to make it go really all the way down to the bottom. 2x instead of 3x, so lower resolution, but, you know, will people be able to see that and really care so much about it? But also a lot of fun colors, which is something, not going to name any names in Otco, like purple phones we've been agreeing on for a long time. But it looks like all the fun colors are going to go onto the less expensive line again.
Yeah, and it's such a cheap thing to do that makes phones so much more appealing, particularly when you get into the situation where people are walking into the phone stores and they may not necessarily be really fans or dedicated to whatever they have. They just drop whatever it is down the sewer grate, or it's 3 years and it's time for a new one. And if they find they can't decide, and if they were looking at 3 different phones that to them are pretty much the same phone, and one of them is available in banana yellow, they're going to buy the banana yellow one. The only difficulty that you can see about that is how do you make sure there are enough banana yellow phones? How do you anticipate the desire for banana yellow as opposed to grapey grape purple or ice blueberry blue? Yes, I think that they should definitely hire the Gatorade people to come up with the names of their colors. But yeah, no, that's, I mean, it wouldn't make me switch from the iPhone to Android or Android to iPhone. But I have to say that when I have a choice of the one that is this really cool purple color or, oh, good, black or a different shade of black. Awesome. I'll definitely go the cool one.
I do think somewhere inside Apple, all they think is cool is black and a different shade of black. and they do the colors for the kids. You know, it's kind of like, oh, well, the kids have a thing.
I don't think we see
Johnny Ive using a brightly colored phone.
I'm blanking on her name, but there was a woman in the industrial design department whose only job it was for color. And during an interview, she came up and showed an orange Apple Watch cloth to Johnny. He just said, no, that's far too dorm room carpentry. All right, we're going to take a short break. We're going to take a short break. There's so much to get to, but Leo wanted to leave us a little something from the road.
I don't know if, do you cook? I have by the stove, I think it was Anthony Bourdain who said you have to have this, one of those squeeze bottles, you know, like you see them at picnics for ketchup and mustard, but I have Tres Puntas olive oil in it. I use it all. I use olive oil so much, I just want to always have it there for a quick, on a salad, a quick, for dipping bread, for cooking, Tres Puntas. You know the name because we've been talking about their coffee for a long time. Actually, they're an interesting company. They started doing the coffee, you know, from the single farm in Brazil, and they realized there's a market. Did you see the 60 Minutes piece about Italian olive oil a couple of years ago? I stopped buying Italian olive oil because so much of it is adulterated. And I was really concerned. I started buying local olive oil. It wasn't as good. I mean, we grow olives around here, but it wasn't as good. It was a little bitter. So when the folks at Tres Puntas said, you know, we can source amazing olive oil from the Casablanca Valley in Chile, which is, by the way, perfect for producing olives and olive oil, would you be interested? I said, yes. And then they sent me some. This is from a single farm, Jose Miguel Armaz's orchard in Chile. It's in the Casablanca Valley. Perfect climate. And this is extra virgin olive oil. This is the real deal. And I can tell. You know how you can tell? Look on your olive oil and look at the acidity. First of all, it should say extra virgin olive oil. That means it's the first press. This one is cold pressed. That means no chemicals, no heat. They prioritize flavor, quality, aroma over yield, right? So a lot of times you'll get olive oil and they use heat or they do pressure extraction. Yeah, you get more olive oil that way, but it's not better olive oil. This is cold pressed. They're handpicked and immediately cold pressed. And they use premium olives from five different varietals, Frantoio, Arbequina, Lecchino, Cortina, and Arbosana. I do know this is the sweetest, best-tasting olive oil I've ever had. Less than 0.2% acidity in every bottle. Now, that's really important. It's actually, in most cases, less than 0.1, but you know, the labels they print. So just to make sure it'll never be more than 0.2. It's often less than that. If you've tasted olive oil, see, I use olive oil. I'm Italian. I dip bread in it, right? So you really taste it. And a lot of the olive oil, all the olive oil we get here in Northern California has a bite to it. That's the acidity. This is so delicious. It's so smooth. And look at the color. It is green. It is beautiful. You can tell where it was grown at the farm, Jose Miguel's orchard. If there's a QR code on it, scan it with your phone. And you'll see exactly the olive trees that this olive oil came from, which is awesome. That's a nice feeling. And the other thing, the price is so good that, you know, sometimes on an olive oil like this, it's so good, this really dipping olive oil, and I use for salads and, you know, eating on bread and stuff like that, because it's too expensive. This is so affordable. I use it for everything. Why not use the best olive oil for everything? For cooking, for eating, for salads. It's so good. You can be called extra virgin olive oil with acidity as high as 1%. No, this is 0.2%, and I can tell you it makes a difference. Olive oil is good for you. We all know that. The FDA says eating 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day may reduce the risk of heart disease. That's that Mediterranean diet they all talk about. Omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids. I don't use any other oil for cooking. Even for making popcorn, I use, because it's so affordable. Why not? Tres Puntas Extra Virgin Olive Oil. I'm telling you, you've got to taste this. Now, you could just buy a single bottle if you don't trust me on Amazon. They sell on Amazon. But once you want it, once you know you want it, I subscribe. Just like the coffee, Tres Puntas offers a subscription on their website only. You'll save 10% when you subscribe off any bottle. And because you're watching Mac Break Weekly, you get an extra 10% off when you go to Tres Puntas, T-R-E-S-P-O-N-T-A-S, trespuntas.com/MacBreak, and use the code MacBreak. So 10% for subscribing, 10% because you're listening to this show, is 20% off. Now it's really affordable. And you can combine some of that great Tres Puntas coffee in your order to get the same 20% discount. Get a single bottle from Amazon if you want, and then subscribe. Sure, why not? But maybe get two, because I'm telling you, once you start eating this, once you start trying this, you're going to say, oh, I need this everywhere. Like I said, I keep this in a squeeze bottle by the stove. I use it for everything. My mom, when I was a kid, had one of those big cans of Italian olive oil that she would liberally use when she cooked. I mean, I grew up with that. Oh, I should send mom some. She would flip her lid. TresPuntas.com/MacBreak. Use the code MacBreak for 20% off. Best olive oil you've ever had. I am an olive oil fan, and I will tell you that right now. I'm sorry. I am probably in Italy as we speak. Chile, Tres Puntas, it's the best. Now back to Mac Break Weekly, which is already in progress. Am I making you hungry, guys?
So happy. So happy Leo took a break from all his Yamon and Berica to tell us about Tres Puntas, so they would be really hungry for the rest of the show. All right, so iPhone. I think the last thing to talk about with the iPhone, and Andy has alluded to this on past shows, is the camera. It's always a big deal. Rumor has it this year it might be an especially big deal because we might finally be getting a lot of the stuff that we saw demoed in the Messages app and the FaceTime app that we've been using on the front-facing camera in the rear-facing camera. And you touched on AR before, Andy, but it seems like every time I'm wondering, what can Apple do next? We got portrait mode and we got portrait lighting. And I was like, oh, for sure, portrait backgrounds are next. But then they did that in the Clips app at the same time as portrait lighting. And I want things. I want like portrait mode video, for example. But it seems like we really are in the dawn of AR cameras.
Yeah, it's especially given that their main competitor is Google, that has gone so far as to say that our company is a machine learning company. So now when they try to promote the camera and their new Pixel phones, they don't necessarily talk about the image sensor or the lens or what kind of coding is on the lens. They talk about how good the software that they've got on the camera is at figuring out the picture that you were hoping to take versus the picture that sensor was capable of taking and faking it to such a great extent. When I got my Pixel phone a year or two ago, it's fast enough that I just keep it in it has a mode called HDR Plus that is just so good and so natural that it doesn't look like HDR at all. It just looks like I'm taking it with a much better camera. So it's harder and harder to sell a phone camera based on the hardware you're putting in, given that desktop software and even mobile software can do things like figure out, just recognize that this is a face. This is what people like to see in pictures of faces. They want the eyes. If the eyes are in deep shadow, they want it brightened a little bit so you can at least see where the eyes are. They want to know they want a natural skin tone. Not only that, but they want natural skin tone for their own natural personal skin tone, not just for white people, the white engineers who probably created this hardware and created the software. So if the proof is going to be in the pudding. I think this is one of the reasons why Apple has had so much success with things like portrait lighting. It's a way to get a really positive, useful, dramatic feature that people are going to love without necessarily having to make millions and millions of dollars of investment in tech and in first order technology. They can. It's one way. Again, one way of giving people a photo that they love is to once again try to make it look as natural and wonderful as possible. Another way is just simply coming up with better and better ways to blur out the background and isolate the foreground. And I think that's what Apple's going to try to do.
I think Alex just wants a Tango style scanner on the back. Finally, well, a bunch of lasers.
I do. You know, I thought Tango was amazing. Now, we did a lot of testing with Tango, and There were a lot of really successful things. The problem really we had with Tango was A, nobody had it. So you couldn't build anything for it except for internal. And number two was that it burned up the battery very, very fast. So that was the downfall, and that could be still the challenge with a camera on the laser style camera on the other side, because it's, you know, it's easy to make something that can see a couple a foot or two, but it's a whole different thing as far as accuracy goes. Because when you think about the way it scans, the further you get away, the samples actually get further apart too. so that issue, you still could get an amazing amount of data, from an area, but it definitely is much harder to make it work well, more than a couple feet. And so I think that that's going to be the challenge. Now, if you're just taking pictures of your friends right across, that's fine. And it will give you a lot more data. But I think that Apple is figuring out slowly how to use the cameras that they have there to be fairly effective at grabbing that data from where you're at. So especially you'll watch a lot of those demos and you will see people kind of liberally moving the phone around. That doesn't make it harder. That actually makes it easier. So as the camera, if the camera stays in one place and doesn't move at all, there's no parallax and it's really hard to figure out what the 3D scene looks like. As soon as you start to move that camera around in the scene, it starts to track those points. And this is all stuff that we talked about years ago, which was that they're using a lot of old technologies, match moving and, those types of things. What they're basically doing is grabbing, when you want to think about how these cameras are working with these lenses, is I'm going to grab a bunch of points out there, some points of interest, just something that looks that I can, any image that I can grab onto, and I'll just grab as many as I can. The next frame, I'm going to see which ones I still think are the same ones. And so frame to frame to frame, I'm going to track all those 2D points, and then I'm going to look at how those points that I have a lot of confidence in, how they're changing amongst themselves. And that gives me an idea where the camera is. And the great thing that Apple has, or that any phone has, is that the lens doesn't change. When we do it with film cameras, we have to figure out the whole, what lens are they using? What's the distortion and what's the zoom and what's the, chromatic aberration and all the other things that occur when we're trying to track that piece. Whereas with both Google and Apple, you know what that is. You built 75 million of them. They're all the same. So that and again, that changing that and so it's a really great advantage that they have. And so once they're able to start moving that around, they can do a lot of that data, a lot of those calculations without the laser. I think that one of the things that we are going to see missing is a available data set within a lot of these locations. And so, what they want to do is tell you how easy it is. You can have persistence and you can leave something. But what they really need, what would really make things better, and we'll just say that someone's going to get into this as a business. It won't be me. I don't think. Gathering really high quality, searchable data, hashable data that you don't have to get, you don't have to deal with all the data, but you have a lot of data to grab onto. Really having accurate data that does that, that's available to developers, is going to be something that's an emerging market. That's something that people are going to need in the not too distant future, because the cameras can kind of grab onto what they have and they can kind of look at their GPS, but they'd be a lot more fun if they really knew what they were looking at.
So Lori, last year I was at the iPhone launch, and there were people in line and they were buying this super expensive iPhone. And I asked them, why are you upgrading? And they said, well, the cost is kind of incidental because I pay T-Mobile or whoever monthly, but I have kids and I can never go back in time and take a better photo of my kids. So I always want to make sure I have the best camera possible. But I'm wondering, how far does that go? Are these cameras good enough now? Or do you still see people complaining that, pictures of their kids, of concerts, of Disneyland, maybe something close, near and dear to you, could still be better?
I was actually talking to a friend of mine about this who brought his DSLR camera with him to a trip to Japan that he took recently. And he was talking about how that camera was really heavy, and he was considering upgrading to the latest iPhone. And I was just kind of generally talking about how right now the iPhone 10 camera, the iPhone 8 Plus camera, and the software features that go along with them, they really kind of have hit. I mean, there's going to be something better out there, something better technologically out there. But we've kind of hit that point where our phone cameras are almost as good as, and in some cases better than, our analog digital film cameras. And I'm not saying that they're going to be that good, but what I mean is that you can, with the iPhone 10, for example, take those perfect shots of your kid with the beautiful bokeh effect in the background, and it's clear and crisp, and it has the right lighting. You can take them fast the way you would with a point-and-shoot camera, which is something that isn't as easily accessible with the larger DSLR cameras. So yeah, in a way, we've kind of hit that point where the average everyday person can take professional-looking photographs just using their phone. And I don't know how much better the camera needs to get than where it's at now.
Well, I think that one of the interesting things is that we got to a point, we're kind of in this, I was thinking about this the other day, that we're kind of going through this back and forth, because for a long time, SLRs and these big cameras were only there for professionals. And then they got so cheap and so powerful that you just kind of always told everybody, well, everybody should, you should always have an SLR, you know, you should get a DSLR because it's just so easy, and the pictures are going to look so much better. And now I would say that I would almost lean to the point where I would say that I do think that there's a reason to have an SLR. I look at photos that I shoot with a DSLR and they are better, significantly better. I can see that. and I have zoom. I can, I've got a 300mm lens I can throw away in there and get this great photo. And it's, and it definitely is a higher quality. It's better resolution. It's all those things. And so I do think that there's a place for that. But I think that for the most part, the quality of an iPhone 8, and above, I would say has passed the skill set of the average parent. And what I mean by that is, it's not the tool at some point. You really have to learn how to frame it. I know when I go to my kids' friends, they all go to Chuck E. Cheese. They love Chuck E. Cheese. And so my kids are a little older now. They don't go as much. But at a certain age, they were all going to Chuck E. Cheese. It was like we were there like every 3 weeks. And their parents would bring an SLR and I'd watch them shooting it. And I just knew that those photos weren't going to turn out well. And so I'd always go, hey, what kind of camera do you got? Oh, that's really cool. Do you think I could borrow that for a second? Or you just see how it works? I'm just always looking at cameras. And then I would take all the photos for their thing, and then I'd hand it back to them. That's a really great photo.
So then they have at least a handful of photos that are really nice.
That's why Uncle Alex got so many invitations.
Yeah. But the thing is that it was my sister does that, by the way. My sister does that to me. So anyway, and the distance between a parent and me is the same distance between me and my sister. But the interesting thing there is that I think that for the most part now, having that camera with you all the time, I think the average person, my wife now takes pictures with her iPhone 8, and she's, they look great. I mean, they're great photos of the kids and great photos of stuff she's shooting. And I think that is much better than carrying, not carrying it around or not having it there all the time. I do think that if you have, there are a lot of specific uses that make sense to still have a really high-end camera, underwater, rugged, as well as being able to, if you really know what to do with those lenses, I think that the professional area, now that we're going to mirrorless with Canon and Nikon, most likely, I think that race is going to get a lot more intense, and we're going to see, more features with all those cameras as well, because they have to fight now for a smaller and smaller island, because a lot of people aren't buying, an extra camera.
Right, because if you're presenting that moment in time where you are going to buy a new camera and you're looking at a $1,000 DSLR, and that's not including lenses that you have to buy, or you're talking about a $1,000 iPhone that is going to take really great pictures too, there's that decision you have to make. And frankly, the iPhone 10 satisfies most of that. And I agree with you that there's a lot of reasons why you should have an SLR, but when you're making those decisions, the quality of the hardware and software that comes with the iPhone 10 and other cameras that aren't Apple related too, it's just the technology has gotten to that point where you can actually have those two options and then choose the phone, because it really is good enough for what you're going to need for most cases.
Yeah.
And then later, when you have the extra money, you buy the SLR camera.
Yeah, exactly. If you have the extra money, I would say that having that phone, having that extra phone at the house, maybe you don't take it everywhere, maybe the phone satisfies, you don't carry it around as much as you used to, but you should take pictures. If you're a parent, you should try to take pictures with an SLR of your kids at least once a month. Just find some solution that causes that, because those are always, I look back on these photos. There was a kind of a gap where I broke a camera and a lens and I didn't, in the desert and I didn't replace it quickly. And I just shot a lot with iPhones, and there's a section of time with my kids that it doesn't look as good, as it does when I'm shooting with the SLR.
So, in other words, you have cameras that you're willing to sell to those parents who need a new camera.
Yeah. But yeah, look, a band of cameras.
Yeah. Lori's absolutely right. I'm a photo nut, and so I'm the person who says, oh, a little bit of purple fringing around that high. Oh, isn't that too bad? But the thing is, most people just want to take snapshots. They want to take good pictures. And so there came a point about a couple of years ago where, yes, if you want to do an exhaustive test with a test card, take the exact same pictures under the exact same lighting conditions, and then magnify to see which one captured more detail, which one captured more range of tone, you could determine that something is a better camera than the other one. But it's way beyond now the people's expectations for a camera. People take pictures with their phones instead of with a $500 camera because it's plenty good enough for them. And that does point to the challenge that Apple and other manufacturers have. If they want to keep saying that they have the best camera out there, it's not necessary. If either you have to qualify that as the best camera for consumers. So again, they want a party shot where in a dimly lit function room or bar where it doesn't look like washed out faces in front of jet black background. They want to make sure that eyes twinkle and sparkle. So this is it's these extra really, really cool and human oriented modes that I think will keep pushing Apple above the rest.
We just printed a bunch of photos that I shot with my iPhone that I have on the wall in our studio, in our green room. And I look at them and I'm like, I can't believe I just shot those with a phone. Yeah. They're not all with a phone, but a lot of them are just like, I just shot it with a phone. And it was just like what I had sitting there. And it's kind of amazing. And I think the issue that a lot of these camera manufacturers have is that Apple and Google are applying a lot more money to that technology. Yeah. I mean, they just have, because they're dealing with a much larger scale.
Can I say that I just entered my first a juried photo exhibition for the very first time, and one of the pictures that I submitted was taken through the window of a train with an iPhone 10. And the great thing about Google Photos or Apple Photos is that it's very democratizing. You just look at the image. It doesn't say, hey, you didn't take that with a real camera. You took that with a phone. But, oh, my God, it's just such a beautiful picture. And every technical thing I would want from my $2,000 camera, it did just fine for that shot. So, yeah, there's things are different.
And now, you.
Exactly. I'm not going to tell the jury that. I'm just going to say that.
All right, so moving from phones, moving from pockets to wrists, the other big leak that 9to5 Mac got, not leaks, wrong word, the other bit of something they found, the other image they managed to find somewhere on the interwebs is of an Apple Watch Series 4. Unlike the iPhone, I don't think that name was ever in doubt. And thankfully, it's got the same band as every other Apple Watch, so you're not going to find me lying in a state of learned helplessness, sobbing in the fetal position anytime soon. But it does show the rumored embiggened display. The bezels have been removed. The black ring has finally been closed. And everything is moved out towards the edges. But I think the biggest thing, there's a lot of little details, like a ring instead of a red dot, an extra microphone on the side. Some people are saying it looks thinner, but I think that's hard to tell given sensor side. But my God, it is glorious. The application of Edward Tufte's informational density to this display with what I'm calling super complications is breathtaking. I mean, it might be too much. In actual practice, this might be overload for me. But in terms of pure data visualization, this is, Andy, like, it's beyond impressive to me. It shows not just glanceable data, but glanceable context on like a thing that I can wear on my wrist.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a far cry and such a really nice leap from those first demos we saw 4 years ago where, look how easy it is to press this button and now you see a constellation of app icons, any of which you can scroll through and tap into to use these wonderful little phone apps. I think that it does look cluttered by a certain point of view. It probably won't be the only, I'm guessing it's not the only watch face you can have on there. But I think that the companies and the designers who really get what a wearable is all about, it really is about this gesture, glancing to get that one piece of information you did this to get, and then putting your hand back down again. And so the ability to, what really sold me about that screenshot was the timer in the upper, that's the timer complication, this one put in the upper left-hand corner, where I know that I've got dinner in the sous vide. I know this is going to take about an hour and 45 minutes to cook. It's not the sort of thing where I want it to dominate my wrist, but I want to know, do I have time to go out for a walk and come back now? Glance, and you got it. So I'm keen to see how that will affect app design, to see if we wind up with a couple different classes of apps and users. I'm really curious to see if they manage to pack all those extra pixels also in the smaller version of the watch as well as the larger one, so everybody gets that benefit. And I'm also going to say, please, thank you for the extra pixels, but let developers design their own watch faces. They're really good at design. But yeah, it's nothing but a really good, based on one illicit press image, I like that. That is a really, really good thing for me to see. I like it.
I have to explain something to Lori Gill, because the thing on the top right-hand side there, Lori, that's a high and low temperature for places that have climates where you actually do have cold weather and hot weather sometime during the same day.
You mean it's not yellow all the time?
No, it's not yellow. It can get hot or it can get cold.
Nice, comfortable yellow all day long, all night long.
you can replace it with air quality if you'd like.
that might be something I would need instead.
I can't say that I'm still the only feature that I want on the watch. I don't care about what they do. I don't care how thick it is. I don't care how big it is. I just want to be able to design my own watch face. Like it's now gotten to the point where now every time Apple talks about the watch, the filter that it's going through, I'm just la, 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 la. Like it's just static, until, and then I'm waiting for them to say,
so now, is it that or always on time, Andy? Sorry, Alex. Is it that or always? Because everything on a watch, everything in mobile is paid for by battery life. If you make it thinner, you're paying for that in battery life. If you add a bigger screen or more complications or more features, I would like them to spend it on always on display before they get into custom watch faces.
Yeah.
That's my big.
The thing is that there's for production reasons, I admit, and I think there's a lot of people who have specific things that they haven't thought of with the 10 white watch faces that we get that would love to be able to use it in a specific way. And I think I posted mine on Twitter at some point. Like, I designed one. Like, that's what I want. You know, and if Apple gave me that one, then I wouldn't care anymore.
Yeah, he's going to
So, but I think that there's a lot of industries that would love to be able to say, for what we do, these are the complications that we want, and this is how we want it to be organized, because that's, you know, whether you're in construction or medical or there's certain things that you want to have there. And I think there's a huge opportunity to develop those. And I get that it may affect the battery life, and maybe that's why they're doing it. But I think we can set some limits. You could set some bars, and then we can tell you, you know, you're about to do this, and you may have shorter battery life. But the point is that, you know, it just, like, that's the one thing that I always go, oh, Android, you can just build your own. You can just make your own watch faces.
Yeah, for me, it would be enough that they just put complications on the photo face, because all I want is an old school, like, original era Superman, from Action Comics number one with complications.
I just want seconds, and not that stupid exercise one with the little, like, everyone, every time I say this on the show, I get a whole bunch of people on Twitter going, they already have seconds. You can, and they send me the watch face. And I'm like, I would never put that watch face. I would never talk to someone in public with that watch face on. So I would, you know, like, that's just goofy. So I just want a really subtle one that gives you seconds, you know, anyway, it's just
production.
I think the idea of being able to have a watch face kit. So Apple can have their guidelines that help restrict how much battery it's using. And developers can then use this watch face kit to develop these watch faces that don't mess with your watch. And like, do you trust, you know, you trust the developer community to make apps and for your phones and for your watches and for your Mac? Why don't you trust them to make these watch faces? If you've given them the guidelines that they have to adhere to, why not give that to developers so that they can create beautiful watch faces that we can choose from a beautiful watch face store? That would be so cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's probably the same reason they don't give you UIKit apps yet. They just have to do it. I'm wondering though, Lori, like, are these I count nine complications. If you don't include the second, the minute, and the hour hand, I count nine complications here. You have the four in the corners, you have the four in the middle, and then you have the 12 p.m. lunch with Ken Tartine, who's a popular dude, by the way, right on the top. And I don't know if that goes to the bottom, if it's a 6 p.m. lunch, because that would be kind of cool. I don't know any of these things yet, but that's a lot of information to take in at a glance.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's something, obviously, and you don't have to use that complication, but there is something to be said for it. That's a little busy. I think I wouldn't have that many on my watch face, because at a glance, I wouldn't be able to read all of the information I want. I would probably take out a lot of those things inside the watch face, the music controls, the ring closures,
Whatever the planet Earth is.
Planet Earth. Maybe that has to do with like when the sun rises and sets or something like that. I would clear it out a little. Everything on the corners, I think, is really great, really easy to see. It's colorful so that it gives you, your eyes are drawn to it. And that's great. The lunch with Ken section, that's a little busy, hard to see. But then again, I'm used to looking at my watch face, which is significantly smaller because of the bezel situation. So maybe when that's spread out across the entire watch face, maybe that becomes a lot easier to see. Again, we won't know until we're looking at them with our very own eyes and instead of just one found marketing photo.
Yeah, and also that's well within the tradition of watch faces since time immemorial. I'm not wearing my Casio G-Shock watch, but it has the time, it has the date, it has another panel for Bluetooth notifications, and it's got that's fine. I think a lot of people actually will like that kind of style because it's well within the tradition of nice watches.
It's a dashboard. So my last question before we jump back to Leo on his Italian adventure is: do they keep a series one around at an even lower introductory price? Do they get rid of series one and go to series two at the same price series one currently is? Or do they go all the way to series three as the entry level and get LTE out on more wrists for more people? What do you think the play is there?
They have to keep the lowest price point there. I'm looking for it right now. It was in my list of things I read online, but I need to check the details of. Someone was claiming that the Series 1 is actually Apple's best-selling Apple Watch. Don't know if that's true. I think that given that they're competing not as they hoped with $2,000 high-end timepieces, they are actually competing with $100 and $150 and $200 fitness watches. They need to have that $250 buy-in. That's what makes the entire rest of the line super credible, because people will buy the 251 as a fitness watch, and then when there's a new one when they decide that I really love this watch, I'd love to get the one with GPS and the walkie-talkie feature, and you know what, maybe I will get the stainless steel model this time because I love it so much and I wear it every day.
It took Apple years to get the phone to have multiple sizes, therefore multiple options to invest. I don't think they're ready with the watch to give us the low-cost entry-level watch. I think they're still going to stick with this is the price and these are the options. And instead of the, you know, 5 years old version that you could get, I think they're going to just kind of say, nope, you can get series four and that's it. Or you can buy a third party and get an older one. I don't think they're ready to give us.
You don't think they're going to keep the Series 1 around or replace the Series 1 with the 2?
I don't think so. I don't think they're ready yet. I think they're going to keep pushing, buy the newest one, and then in a couple years, they'll bring in the older they'll keep around an older model that you can use.
Yeah, I think they'll keep two. I don't think they're ready to go to three. Like, I would love it if they kept the Series 1 or the Series 2 around even cheaper than it is now to get even more people in. And replace the current Series 1 price point with a 2 or 3. I just don't know if we'll see that. But I do think they'll replace the Series 1 with a 2 or a 3. Hopefully a 3, because I think that's good.
I mean, I think the biggest jump that they've had between watches, in my opinion, from a real usability perspective, has been the battery life. You know, the battery life has gotten better, I think, from watch to watch. I definitely feel like the 3 is much better than the previous ones. And so that's the biggest argument. I have to say, I don't really use any features that I don't use any features on my current watch that I couldn't have done with Series 1, except for the fact that I felt like the battery life was really short. So, and I don't really think about it. Now, maybe that I don't know whether the battery life is that much longer or I've just gotten really good at charging, you know, because it's like I got these little chargers sitting around and things. And so I'm constantly, if I sit down at a desk for a while, I just throw the thing in there because I just don't want to think about it.
My Series 3 lasts about 2 days now. And it's with like a workout a day. If I do two workouts, it drops. But if I do one workout, it stays around 2 days.
You know how you fix that? Don't work out.
Oh, see, now Siri's busy answering. So needy, so thirsty, Siri. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go back to Leo in, did he say he was in Italy this time?
Let me interrupt a little bit, if you don't mind, to talk about our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you're ready to buy a house, it's by all means do it. I bought my first house. I was in my 30s already. Married, and we had a kid on the way. Actually, I think Abby was already born, so this was about 26, 27 years ago. And I was doing a real estate show, and the realtor said, Leo, you're still renting? And I said, yeah. Leo, you gotta buy a house. And I thought, yeah, I have a family. We should own a house. And that was the first house we bought. Now, you know, a few years later, 26 years later, I've bought a few houses since then, one after the other. I don't have more than one. Because it's a big deal. It's probably the biggest thing you'll ever buy, right? The biggest check you'll ever write. And each time I got a mortgage, but I have learned a vital lesson. Last time Lisa and I, we bought the house we're living in right now about 4 years ago. We went to the big bank. And first of all, I don't like the idea of having to dress up and pretend, you know, oh yeah, I'm prosperous. I don't need the loan. I'm going to give you a chance to lend me some money. And then they give you this boom, big stack of papers and you got to fill it out, go to the attic, get the pay stubs, go to the basement, get the bank statements. It's just a lot of work. We were faxing stuff in for months. Literally, it took 2 months. This next time we buy a house, I know how I'm doing it. Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country for several reasons. Number one in volume, but I think that just happened like in December, and that I'll tell you why. Because for 8 years, they've been number one in mortgage approval and customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. So you make customers happy, you're going to be the biggest lender. And that's exactly what's happened. But they still have that customer-centric focus. And that's why I love Rocket Mortgage. They've created a way to take the anxiety out of buying a house. It's going to be anxious-making. But at least you don't have to worry about interest rates going up. You don't have to worry, well, are we good for it or anything like that. Here's what you do. You can do it entirely online, by the way. No need to dress up and show off to a bank officer. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. The process is a three-step process. First step, very quick, under 10 minutes. In most cases, I'm going to say most cases, under 10 minutes. You go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. You answer a few simple questions, and then based on their relationship with all the financial institutions, they say, is it okay if we, verify? You say yes. Nice. Okay, so that's very quick, very fast, very easy. You could do that in open house. You can show them. Now, within 24 hours, step two of the power buying process happens. A loan officer looks over the stuff, gets out his big rubber stamp, boom, boom. You don't have to do anything. This is all happening automatically, and verifies you. Once you're verified, you're basically, it's called verified approval. You get a letter you can print out if you want, show it to the realtor. More importantly, show it to the seller's realtor because that puts you right at the front of the line. Basically, it's like you have cash. You're good for the money. You've got the loan. No contingencies. You got the loan. I can tell you right there, that is great. Step three happens after you get the verified approval. You qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They will lock up your rate. The rate that they quoted is locked in, cannot go up for up to 90 days, which means you have up to 3 months to shop with no pressure, no rush, no hurry. Interest rates are going up, but you don't worry. because you know you've got the rate. In fact, if the rate goes down, your rate will go down. So you win either way, but it cannot go up. That's what they call rate shield approval, and it's exactly what you'd expect from a mortgage lender, the best in the country, that really thinks about what makes a difference to customers. These are the things you want. This is the things you get at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Some legalese, rate shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. So here's what you got to remember. In fact, I would do it right now. Just start, right? Get signed up. You can do it on your phone, rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Back to the boys.
All right. So we talked a little bit. Oh, yeah, the boys and Lori Gill. Speaking of which, we do. We are blessed to have Lori Gill from iMore here, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core, and Andy Inotko from both radio and internet fame. Print was not enough for him. The man has expanded to our airwaves now as well, and we're better off for it. So we talked a lot about real products. It's time to talk a little bit about imaginary products, or maybe not so imaginary. One of Apple's self-driving test vehicles, which is not an Apple car yet. It's a Lexus SUV with a ton of sensors just stapled. I think they literally use staples, probably not, but stapled to the roof, was minding its own business, about to get onto a California expressway, which my understanding are incredibly complicated beasties, when it was malevolently and horribly rear-ended by a 15-mile-an-hour Nissan Leaf. So Apple is required to file these things with the Department of Motor Vehicles, the California Department of Motor Vehicles, which then helpfully puts it on the web so that every tech blog and business blog in the world can find it and publish it. And there it is. I mean, Lori, we've been hearing rumors about Apple cars for a long time. And it's one of those things that you can't just keep in a lab. You actually have to put it out on streets. And that makes this really different from sort of an Apple Watchers perspective. We get to see the sausage being made literally on the highways in front of us.
Well, the only reason that we ever found out that this was an Apple developing car, that is because of the car accident. So, you can put those out on the road and nobody needs to know who is in charge of that. Most people are going to think it's Tesla or something like that, or Google. If I'm reading this correctly, the Apple car, the Lexus that was driving, was trying to get on the expressway going 1 mile per hour. Immediately, those red flags go up for me. That's dangerous.
Humans are scary, Lori.
Coming from a California girl who grew, born and raised in California, have never lived anywhere in my life. If you can't get your car going 40 miles an hour by the time it gets on the freeway, you're doing it wrong. So this definitely, if that's not just like a typo and it was going 10 miles per hour instead of 1 mile per hour, they shouldn't have been testing that out on the road at that point.
We also don't know what time it was, you know, whether it was at one of the stoplights or what, you know, one of the, you know, on-ramp lights, or whether, you know, how busy it was. I will say that probably one of the most complicated things a car has to do, we don't think about it that much as humans, but probably one of the most complicated thing a car has to do is merge, you know, merging onto a highway from another road is probably one of the harder things other than rain or, you know, a lot of, you know, country roads or whatever, even those, you're dealing with a lot of traffic. Most importantly, you're dealing with a lot of humans, and that's unfortunate for the machine because humans are crazy, you know? So I think that's probably the challenge. I do agree with you though, that getting rear-ended seems to be what most of these cars have to do because they're doing something other than what a human, you know, that's the accidents they're getting into, is because the human don't know that they're a machine and think that they're going to act like a human and then don't. And they run into it. And it is still your responsibility. Everything in front of your car is still your responsibility. So it doesn't let them off the hook, but it does point to them acting different. Now, I will argue that I think that in 20 or 30 years, we're going to get to a point where they just make a law that says on these highways, you can't drive your own car. Like it's too much trouble to deal with the humans. And, you know, if you want, it won't be everything. It'll be like you drive, you know, you might drive somewhere, but you have to be hands-free. But you know, when they say hands-free, it won't be hands-free or a phone. It'll be hands-free for the car, you know, that you have to drive in certain areas, just because it'll create too many variables that they don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
Alex, well, you're so right in that case. If all of the cars are not being driven by humans, then it's all going to be perfect because they all know the way to drive.
It's all going to be perfect until someone hacks the car. You know, and then it's going to be really
horrible.
Jailbreakers. You know what they say? you know what they say? You know, to err is human, but to really screw things up requires a computer. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I think a whole bunch of automated cars that all are talking to each other is all great until someone hacks in and runs them like lemmings off the side of the road.
Yeah. I think that rather than making it, if a version of that is implemented, it will be just like there is a high occupancy vehicle lane. Yeah, there will be a separate automated vehicle lane because I don't think that you will ever be able to clear a road of human driven vehicles, because by definition that aces out anybody who can't afford a vehicle that was made in 2022 or later, and that's not going to happen for a good deal of time. But it really does point out how difficult the last 5% of this problem is. The first 95% you can solve with engineering, you can solve with money, you can solve with training a model. The last 5% is stuff like one of the most important factors that keeps a driver safe is being able to get a read on what another driver is going to do. Not just simply there's a gap here, or here's where the turnoff is, or here's the condition of the road. You merge into the highway, but it's terrifying for a new driver because you have to trust that the traffic that is approaching sees you and does not want to smash into you, because unless you're driving at 2 a.m., there's going to be traffic and they're going to have to let you in. Similarly, when you're on regular surface roads, there's you have to know that a car has to know the difference. I think another article last week made an allegory that was so good that I'm going to have to steal it, even though I can't remember who to attribute it to. When you see people, pedestrians on the side of the road, if you you have to decide, are these people going to jaywalk in front of the car or are they going to stay put? If it is like four teens who are chatting and having a good time and looking at their phones, you might slow down in case they jaywalk. If it is three people who are clearly have time on their hands or whatever, you make that judgment, and that judgment call happens with other people as well. So that's why I think that having dedicated lanes of traffic for automated vehicles is going to come before we allow free roaming, free range cars. It's just another data point on how we really do have to reinvent surface transport for all the different classes of vehicles that didn't exist in the 1950s when all these roads were being built. Not just autonomous vehicles, but also like self-powered vehicles, personal electric vehicles like scooters and skateboards and bikes. These aren't things you can just simply dump into existing infrastructure. You have to rebuild with all this stuff in mind.
And there is no indication, if anyone's curious, that the person driving this Leaf was a blogger or YouTuber or podcaster hunting Apple autonomous vehicles. This was a real honest accident. But it does show how hard it is to keep these sort of things under wraps. The other big leak this week we didn't talk about was someone left a Pixel 2 XL in a cab. And the cabbie was, the guy wasn't even surprised. Like, oh, this has leaked so much, I know immediately what this is. Here, you can have it back. That's sort of the state.
After he took a picture of it, of course, yes. to put on social media.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we've gotten to now. The other one is that Apple is again buying companies. This is another way that we sort of get hints at what Apple is working on. And this time it was a company focused on making AR lenses. And one of Apple's special project group is the Titan Project for car. But the other one, or at least one of the other ones, is the Apple Glasses group. And we still, Apple has famously, Tim Cook loves his augmented reality. He's talked about it all the time. But this Aconia Holographics, it's particularly lenses based. And Lori, does that give you an indication that Apple might be working on, honest rootin' tootin' sunglass shade glasses to put on our faces?
I mean, yes and no. So on the one hand, yeah, why would they be buying it if they weren't looking into it? So definitely they are looking into it in some respect. But at the same time, it's important to remember that, that Apple is buying up companies all the time in order to figure out if they're going to be doing the next thing involving that particular product. So on the one hand, all signs point to Apple glasses in the future, including comments that come from Tim Cook. But there's been a lot of rumors, for example, about an Apple-branded television set. I mean, a decade minimum. And we still haven't seen that yet. And that doesn't mean it will happen. It doesn't mean it won't happen. It just means that, sure, Apple's going to buy these companies and they're going to see whether or not they can use this technology to get what they want. And if they can't get what they want, then it goes on a shelf and they will come back to it in the future when technology is better. So ideally, I want to see Apple glasses in the same way that HoloLens kind of works. I'd like to have like a lot of sort of AR interactivity. I love this idea of being able to just wear glasses that will also act as a computer screen in front of me instead of a video game system. I would prefer
like the Iron Man display, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like a heads up display that has computer settings in front of you that you can look one way or another to get, you know, to point on something. You can actually use gestures to navigate through an interface or something like that. I think there should be definitely a separation between gaming VR and computer-based AR. And I think that you could develop something beautiful with the Apple design and a pair of glasses that lets you interact with your computer instead of just play video games.
Well, and I think that there's a work when it looks like my glasses, you know, when it's not much different, not my glasses, but this as simple as this, and it's not more complicated and it doesn't look like a big thing on your head. And, you know, I think that there's a whole range of things that you're talking about that are going to be great. I mean, it'll be as simple as like you walk into a party and it goes that her name is Sherry. His name is Frank. You know, Frank has, and as you're talking to Frank, you might see extra data about Frank. Like Frank has three kids and his wife's name is Susan. And, you know, like there could be a lot of things that are kind of going on, you know, all kinds of extra data that's coming to you as you need it. That's contextual to what you're actually looking at. And I think that we're going to see a lot of that, you know, as we move forward. And it's going to be both. I think audio will come first. I think some of the patents that we saw Apple do years ago, where they're able to control how much of the outside world that you hear, I think that's moving towards a place where you put earbuds in and you just leave them in all day, you know, and you don't really, you know, think about that, much like you'd have a hearing aid. But you wouldn't necessarily have bad hearing. You just want to be able to interact with data all the time. And so I think that this is one piece of it. I think that how they use it, I don't know whether that. I think Apple's math is probably very much of how many engineer hours and how much time will we spend trying to figure this out, or we can spend X millions of dollars and just have those guys tell us how they did that part. We may not see any of the technologies that are there, but they gather the patents, they gather the brain, and they need those brains for X number of years. I mean, they don't need them forever. They just need them to, you know, assimilate. Definitely in that area, there's probably only a handful of people that really have thought about it enough. Then those guys are probably the ones. And so they probably decided that they probably know a lot. It'd be great to surround them with a team and give them some more resources and see where it goes. And they'll learn a lot and make a lot of decisions about their product line. I think they're still very early on it. I don't expect to see anything soon from that. But I think that it does put everybody else, you know, on notice that, you know, there's this kind of big lumbering tank that's slowly moving towards them. You know, it's not fast. It's not there, you know, but and they are taking advantage of the fact they have all those phones. So all this AR technology, all the tracking, all the, you know, Siri, all those things, I think, are moving towards this. This is a very long play that Siri, AR, all these things get to a point where right now we don't take our computer anymore because we take our phone. Soon we're going to take, you know, 5 years from now, 6 years from now, and maybe we don't take anything. We just make sure we're wearing our glasses. You know, I think that's the, you know, and maybe every once in a while, the phone might become the tank.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, people, we always think about all this Hollywood movie sort of ways of doing AR. I do think it could be as simple as in your office or in your house, you have a picture. You decided you have a regular picture or a poster print of whatever it is you usually have, but it's in a frame that's in an unusual color or has an unusual bar pattern on the side of it. And that means that frame is there is so that when your AR glasses cast across that, it knows that that is a place that I want I want information to be projected, such as here is the kitchen timer, or here is a view of the front porch, or here is a chat window that I'm doing. It doesn't necessarily have to be hovering the Sims type bubbles above people, telling people what their happiness level is and who they are and last time you met them. But this the thing to remember though, and why AR is so important on phones, is that Apple is, and everyone else is, waiting for hardware that doesn't exist yet and isn't even on the near horizon yet. That's why every single group that is selling a wearable eye AR technology piece, whether it's a HoloLens, whether it's Magic Lens, whether it's whatever that, they're selling it as a developer kit so that developers can experiment and figure out what they're doing and what kind of stuff they want to make. The stuff that people would actually want to wear on their faces, and not even something as nerdy as these glasses, but even if Apple and other companies can create a product that's so compelling, they're willing to wear something with thicker arms to it or a thicker bridge here. That is so far in the future that it's like we're talking about. We can talk about all the different ways we would run a surface mission on Mars. We don't know how to get there yet. We don't have the hardware to get there yet. Or maybe Jupiter is a better way of explaining it. We just don't have the hardware to get there yet. We know once we have a pair of glasses that can actually be comfortable to wear and not disruptive, we know what software we'd want to put on it, but we don't have it yet.
And it's kind of amazing that you can have a company that can spend probably hundreds of millions of dollars on something that you know, we'll see how it turns out. You know, we'll just keep on putting, you know, just turning, you know, having these huge crews, you know, figuring something out that you know is going to be a big deal. And I think that as we look at the reason that Apple is probably still going to keep on growing in value is if you look out into the car, you know, industry and into the AR industry, you know, there's still a lot of room to grow for the company.
And it's interesting to Lori's point, you know, Apple was working on a television. They made several prototypes, but the decision was made not to move it into production because Apple couldn't, according to the Tim Cook doctrine, they couldn't find a compelling way to sell that product that would be differentiated and also make them, you know, crap ton of money, which is what they do when they enter product categories. So it's sitting in the lab or in Johnny Ive's house, and there's a bunch of other products. You know, famously, again, 1,000 no's for every yes that Apple does explore. And because of their wealth, but also because of their process, they can make 1,000 ideas and distill that down to 100 prototypes, distill that down to 10 working models, and then make a choice. Say, okay, yeah, the phone is a go. The tablet is a go. The television set is not a go. And, you know, that jetpack thing, we'll just save that for 2030 when it, you know, makes more sense. But that's one of the most interesting ways about it. Almost anything that we can think of, they actually have the money to prototype, which is really fun place to be. There was another story that came out right before I shipped back to Leo and then to Pix of the Week. It's not on the list, but I just saw it before we started the show, and that's an editorial by Neelay Patel of The Verge on whether or not Facebook should be split apart into component companies, you know, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Facebook. And the argument being made there is that the Justice Department, the antitrust laws, especially in North America, no longer keep up with the way the companies are evolving. And while things like the Sprint and T-Mobile merger gets a lot of scrutiny, and things like Disney and Fox and maybe Time Warner, those sorts of things, when Facebook buys these companies or Google buys these companies or Apple or Amazon buys these companies, there's almost no oversight to it. And some people have expressed sort of concern that the basic argument is when you talk to a Mark Zuckerberg or you talk to a Jeff Bezos is you can take a little bit of money for your company now, or we'll just duplicate the features and you won't have a company tomorrow. And that a lot of the times these features are duplicative. Like you can post photos on Facebook or Instagram. You can send messages on WhatsApp or through Facebook Messenger. And it's not so much that it's adding or integrating value to Facebook, but it's preventing competition by sort of buying it up and locking it up before it can become too competitive, before it can offer viable alternatives. Like maybe Instagram would have been a more privacy-focused service, or maybe WhatsApp would have continued to be subscription and not ad-based. You know, all these things that might have been more compelling and more valuable to a wider range of consumers. And I was sort of curious what you guys thought, not just about the Facebooks and the Googles and the Amazons, but about the Apple as well, and whether we need more models to sort of maintain consumer choice as we move more and more into the technology age.
I think that we're still going to have – go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, not in this election cycle, but I think in the next election cycle in 2 years, every large company, starting with Facebook and Google, but even Apple, they're going to have a game plan for what happens when the Federal Trade Commission, or worse, the Department of Justice, starts knocking on their doors and saying that you are an anti-competitive company, your existence in your current form is bad for the market. And we want to do something to address that. So I think they're going to have to think about that. I agree. I haven't read that article. I think that breaking up Facebook into making sure that they have to have separate units as Instagram and WhatsApp, I don't think that would hurt the user experience for Facebook users, Instagram users, or WhatsApp users. I do believe that's simply we want to own this so that no one else can own this, and we want to be able to extend our reach into these other realms. That is certainly healthy, I think, for the market. I don't think that breaking up a company like Google is healthy, because they do. There is a 4-hour introductory argument to be had about the extent and the positivity or negativity of Google's data collection activities. But the fact that Android, I'm using Google's operating system and Google services together, makes, in addition to abusing my personal privacy, it also gives me a whole bunch of features that I actually like. That, I think, would be a different thing. But I think Google's in the federal government's headlights even more strongly than Facebook is right now. But I do believe that every large company is going to have to deal with it. The EU has not had any qualms about taking these companies to task, Google particularly, to tell them that you have an unfair advantage. But the difference between the EU and the United States is that the European Union's antitrust laws, as it were, is the question they ask is this creating a bad experience for consumer choice? In the United States, antitrust usually asks the question, is this causing a bad experience for other companies who are trying to operate in that market? So that's not going to be quite as easy to get justice for consumers here as it might be over there.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
I think it'll be complicated. I think that, you know, they really are going to have to rethink the rules. I think that the current infrastructure really requires a certain level. Like, for instance, Apple is a massive company with minority stakes in pretty much every area they work in. So they have a majority stake in the iPhone world, but in the phone world, they're still a minority stakeholder. And so I think that Apple's a good example of a place that it would be difficult to do that. I think that Google would have more trouble if Facebook didn't exist. You know, Apple would have more trouble if Android didn't exist. So there's, you know, I think that the fact that there's only a handful of companies, we have proven that we're willing to let that happen. If you look at our phone companies and our cable companies, there's not that much choice. And we've decided that that's okay because of the scale. And so I think that, I do think that there's an incredible amount of leverage that these companies have. Everything from, the thing that is in many ways frightening, and even, and I know that I participate in it, is I started to watch closely the way Amazon works. Amazon's got all this data. And so what they do is they start, if something's relatively easy to make and you're making it and they know that they're selling a lot of it, they make one just like it. The Amazon Basics, lineup is the situation. Now, they're not a majority. They don't hold a majority stake in any business. And so it makes it, again, complicated to adjudicate. But it's one of those things that you end up in a situation where how do you deal with that? Because it's not just happening there. It's happening in scale in a lot of places, whether it's Walmart. I mean, Walmart destroys companies. I mean, when it comes in, because it's going to go, you're going to give us this price and your margin is going to be so thin you can't measure it. And if we don't like it tomorrow, we'll just not buy anymore. You know, and that's kind of the, that kind of low margin process. And I think that is going to be a challenge for a lot of folks. I do think, though, it's going to be hard to get you have to change the laws. Like, you're not going to be able to make any significant difference. I mean, the EU can do stuff because they're crazy. You know what I mean? what I mean by that is that they don't have any rules. I mean, they don't have any, like, there's a bunch of guys in Brussels that just make stuff up. So they're able to, I mean, they do. I mean, there's just,
it like, sounds like, wrong. No, we will litigate it.
I don't think that this seems right. So we're going to say there's no constitution in the way that we have it, or no set of precedents. It doesn't seem, anyway, from an outsider. I gotta tell you, it's just like, you watch it, you go, I have no idea what they're gonna do next. You know, it's like a crazy football game. It's like, anyway,
okay, we'll do that.
So they don't, without that underpinning of of the rule of law and precedent and constitution, you know, they may do a lot of crazy things. I do think that if they go too far, I do think that you're going to end up with a situation where now we're in a lot of international quandary of they start making rules that are a lot more intense. You've already seen some with GDPR. There are some folks that just turned off Europe. You know, just like,
right, or Tencent or Weibo won't have the same anti-competitive laws applied against them. And then it's how does Facebook compete with international companies that aren't under the same scrutiny?
Right, right. So I think that while you can reproduce certain things, part of your job as a company, I mean, we have worked, closely with some of these companies and part of your job as a company is to look for things that aren't, that they can't replace and figure out how you're going to do that. And you either are going to patent it or you're going, I mean, part of this is just as a business owner, you have to make those decisions and you have to have that tactic. You know, I'm not ready to say the government should protect everybody from everybody else. You know, that if you're building a business and you think that Facebook can reproduce it, then you should either, you know, and you can't survive without that differentiator, you better find another differentiator or you better sell. Like that is the reality. And they have to keep on finding, you know, and you have to keep on evolving. You know, that you can't build a business anymore, not in this industry, not in this world. You cannot build a business that does the same thing over and over again unless you're extremely good, you know, or extremely unique. You know, mediocre is not something that is a viable option.
Did we see this, Lori? Like when, you know, Instagram sold to Facebook and that's fine, but then Snapchat wouldn't. So Facebook made Instagram into Snapchat.
I don't know. So I see what you're saying here. So yeah, there was a time when Instagram wasn't owned by Facebook. It was its own entity and it was doing fantastic. It didn't need to sell to Facebook. It was holding its own by itself, but it did. So when that comes along, when there's a big major let's say social networking company that is so big that it can gobble everybody up, and then there's one that's not as big but they're doing fine on their own, completely separate features, why not sell? Because that's what the world is like right now. Like your dream, most people, a lot of people in the software building industry and in the developer industry, is to build a really great product and then sell it to somebody for $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, $20 million. Why would you turn that down?
Well, so, and again, I think that Snap's current issues, and I don't think they're necessarily, I mean, they still have a lot of things that make them different, but the, you know, their current issues were self-inflicted. It wasn't because they got copied by Instagram. It was because they changed their interface radically and people didn't like it.
But I think Snapchat is still just as viable as Instagram for different types of people. It didn't lose, like, so that's a great example. Instagram getting Insta stories or however you're calling it, that didn't ruin Snapchat. Snapchat was like, that's cool. We're still doing fine. We're going forward. So there isn't necessarily the need for regulation when it comes to features that you add to your software program, because there's evidence that both can still exist. It seems like such a wild west right now of software and development and what is considered okay and what is considered sort of not being a healthy competition for consumers or for the industry itself. Everything is still so new that it's difficult to see the writing on the wall and see what is going to be okay and what's not going to be okay going forward, and when the government does need to step in and make some changes there.
Yeah, they're thinking of letting studios own movie theaters again, Alex. It's the end of time.
But they're not studios. That's the thing that makes it complicated. And I don't think that. I think that the challenge there is that the movie theaters don't have the same leverage that they used to. I mean, they're not. Yeah. This gets back into this whole situation where that market is no longer the market that it was before. When we said that was the only way to release your film back then, now there's a lot of ways to release your film, and so it doesn't make as much sense to hold out. That process, because there's not a monopoly anymore. There's not, you know, I don't know if the studios will, you know, the studios are surviving basically by selling into the new distribution models. I mean, there, if you look at, the new Amazon, I started watching Jack Ryan, which was pretty sure I wasn't going to like, and then now I'm hooked on it again. And so, I'm hooked. It's okay. Here's the deal. It's good enough to keep me watching it. There's still a little too much slowness in it, but it's fine. It's a little plotting, but then they give you just enough action that you're like, oh, I got to come back again. You know, but that one's, I think, produced by Paramount. You know, like, so the studios are, you know, just, you know, a lot of people tried to self build this, you know, YouTube tried to do it themselves, Facebook tried to do it themselves, like where you're trying to work with creators and do all this stuff. And eventually they realize, let's just hire a bunch of showrunners and just turn it into a bunch of shows. And so in a lot of ways, we're still getting the same thing that we got before. It's just new outlets, and people just decide how much, you know, how many dollars per minute they want to spend. And that's kind of the, you know, Facebook being kind of on the low end and HBO being kind of on the high end. And, you know, everybody just kind of sprinkles in between.
Yeah, it's interesting. All right. So one last break with our good friend and traveling humidor entertainer, Leo Laporte, and then back with picks of the week. Haberdasher.
Funny thing happened. Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks, guys. Yes, I know. I'm not here. I'm on vacation, but I had to come back to tell you a story. It won't take long. We mentioned this before. We, for years, have been using HipChat. We're kind of an Atlassian house to communicate. But secretly, and I've hinted at this, I've always wanted to go back to Slack. We used Slack for a while when we were doing our new website, which is now, a couple of years old. And I loved it. I just loved it. It was so much easier to use. I loved the interface. I loved all the integrations. But Lisa said, well, you know, we're using HipChat. I don't want to, you know, there's a resistance. So news comes a couple of months ago. HipChat is joining Slack. Atlassian is taking a percentage of Slack, I guess, and they're going to give them HipChat. And I'm running around going, yay, I get my Slack. Yay. I was so happy. So thank you. We are moving over. Slack is really the best collaboration hub for work. And it really was a revelation, because prior to this, we were using email, right? You might be using email. Email is not ideal because it's not real time. Slack is real time. It's fast. It's quick. It's not all the rigmarole of an email. You just type a thing and it, boom. And it's asynchronous too, though. If somebody's, you know, and I love Slack. They have things like, okay, this is offline time. Don't bug me. That's really important when you're working, to have some time that you're not working. So you can set that in Slack. And then when you come back on, when you're working again, you'll get the message. So it's really convenient. It's really easy. It's much better than emails. It streamlines your team's communication. It also has the most integrations I've ever seen. We use a number of different services. Google Docs, yeah, but also Panopto for the web, to monitor the web servers and stuff like that. All integrates in painlessly with Slack. So it's all in there. Russell is happy too, our IT. He's a contract IT guy, so he has to use everything, right? He's glad. He says, oh, good, thank God, you're moving to Slack. That's what I put my clients on too. Easy, it's convenient. You've got drag and drop file sharing. It works with Jira. We use Jira Confluence. Works with that. That's another integration we've got. We use the Jira Agile stuff that works with that. Salesforce, Zendesk. And we, of course, we're big Google house. It works with all our Google Drive stuff too. Actually, it works with more than 1,000 apps and more all the time. And some fun stuff, too. Slack can be fun. Doesn't have to be fun, but it can be fun, and I like that, too. I'm going to make ours a little fun. And it works everywhere. iOS, Android, on your desktop, on your laptop. I'm taking Slack on our vacation, yeah. And, I don't even mind. I like it. It's fun to use, and it really does make work more efficient. With Slack, your team, it's just better connected. Learn more at slack.com. And if you, like us, we're using HipChat, get ready. It's time to move. The import is easy. It's a very straightforward transition. And I guarantee you and your coworkers will be much happier. Slack.com. We thank Slack for their support. I was jumping up and down when I heard it.
I don't know if we actually gave Lori Gill time to prepare for a pick of a week. So I'm going to let you go last, Lori, just in case you want to, you know, you want a little bit extra time to nail one down. And in case anybody has any... Oh, you do? You want to go first?
Yeah.
Are you ready? All right. Do it before Alex can get to it.
Okay. So I was tossing back and forth as to whether or not I wanted to choose this as my pick, but it's something that surprised me how much I ended up liking it. It's called the Nomad Slim Wallet with Tile Tracking. So it's a standard card-based wallet, so little slots for all of your credit cards, but it comes with a tile tracker, the thin tile tracker, so that you can find your wallet if you lose it. And in the reverse, you can find your phone by using your wallet. It's just a little thing that you press on the inside. It's beautiful. It's made out of really good quality leather. I got one for review, and I literally thought, oh, you know, the wallet itself, it's not my favorite kind of design. I like to have a larger fold out so that I can slide my money in. So I'll probably just pull out the dial tracker and put it back in my current wallet. I love this wallet so much that it is now my new official wallet for all times. I was literally planning on giving it to my significant other because I figured he'd prefer something that's just mostly can only fit your cards and you have to cram your money in. I love it. It fits all of my stuff. It fits my money, and it doesn't take up very much space. It stretches out just enough because it's made out of this really supple leather that will kind of expand with the things that you want to cram in, the cards and things you want to cram in there. So it'll fit them. It'll keep fitting them. At some point it'll burst and it won't be a comfortable fit anymore. But it turns out, even though I usually prefer a wallet that's a little larger that I can kind of fold out large enough to slide some paper money in, plus have lots of extra slots for cards and maybe even a zipper spot for your change or something like that, it turns out that this is the exact right size for me and the exact right design for me. So, and the fact that it comes with the tile tracker to help me if I lose my phone or in the reverse, if I lose my wallet. Turns out this is the perfect thing for me. So there you go.
And it's awesome because with iOS 12, you'll just be able to say, where's my wallet? And it'll beep for you.
And there'll be some Siri shortcut that will actually take my, it'll legs will appear on my iPhone and walk over to my wallet.
Unannounced features. I love it. All right, Alex, if people have any money left over from the wallet, what can they get?
So we had to print a bunch of images for our green room, and I was trying to think, I don't really like frames, and I was trying to figure out what to do, and I finally found these, and there's a bunch of different services that do it, but the ones that I ordered are these metal prints from Nations Photo Lab, and I had never really gotten metal prints, and so I was kind of like, I don't know what they'll be like, so I ordered a couple just to see, and they're not super expensive. They come in a lot of different sizes, and I've got a little bit of everything just to see how they turned out, and they just look great. And so I would, you know, just definitely, if you want to play with a new idea of a way to put up photos, and you literally just upload your photos and they came back and they look, they're very glossy. I mean, you know, but it was what I wanted. But the colors are very rich, and they're, you know, pretty easy to put up. They have a couple of them that have like little, a lot of different styles of them, but, really was happy with them. And so it was something new and different that I started,
doing. Are they really on metal?
They're really printed on metal. It's like a sheet of metal with an image on it. And there's a variety. You can order from them, you know, little backings, little wood blocks that just kind of stick to the back of them. Or they have things that kind of separate them from the wall that are like metal pieces in the corners if you want them. And so there's a lot of different ways to put them on the wall. But it's just, I think it's just a cleaner look than, I just don't like the artifice of frames. You know, like I just like the photo, but you couldn't put just the photo up there because you needed to have something to give it structure. Well, the metal gives it structure. So it has the structure that it needs, and it sits a little off the way I have them set up, it sits a little off the wall, and they're quite nice. So I would definitely try printing them if you're looking for something, a different way to display your photos.
That's awesome. Thank you, Alex. Andy in Notco.
Mine is kind of a double pick here because it is a 1989 Mac User Magazine Eddie Award trophy statue, one of the most beautiful knickknacks that an Apple fan can have. These are the annual hardware and software awards that Mac User, my alma mater, used to give out every single year. These aren't like you click a form on a website and they engrave something onto a square of Lucite. This is an actual like heavy piece of brass sculpture of a Academy Award looking featureless guy holding up a Mac SE as if to either praise it or throw it into a canyon. it is now, it's offered, it's 4 days left in the auction. It's Tuesday right now. So until the end of this week, ends on Friday, I don't know when it ends, but it ends Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And with a buy it now price of $285, I think it would be a great knickknack for anyone who wants, any Mac fan who wants something beautiful in their house, in their home. Also, if you were to buy it, you will prevent me from buying it. because $285, I got $285, but that is well within the realm of, well, here are other, remember how, you know how like you don't actually have like windows sconces in your new new place, and you really need to spend a few hundred dollars to like get the windows like really, really finished that way. Maybe instead of buying another knickknack, you should just get the window. So that's why I'm saying, if you were to buy it and buy it now, it will remove all temptation from me to buy it, and it will allow me to, again, finally get proper window treatments in my office and in my living
room. Unless they buy it for you, Andy, and then it solves both problems.
Well, I didn't want to come out and say that. I'm saying that it's – but thank you for saying instead of me. This would be this would be the classic case of, no, I couldn't possibly. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank all my fans for this award that they bought for me.
I will give you the Oscar speech if I get it. When Mac user shut down, I knew they were emptying out the offices. I did spread the word that I don't know if you guys got any extra ones hanging around, but I, you know, after 10 years of being the Backpage columnist, I'd kind of like to have that as a souvenir. But no, not even a lifetime achievement Eddie Award did I earn for my work. And I understand that. I have the first drafts of all my stuff, so I know that would be a travesty at best.
Did you have something else, Andy?
Nope, that was it.
Oh, okay. Mine is more of a reminder than a pick. I did pick this previously on the show. It's the book Creative Selection by Ken Kishinda, and it is now, as of today, available to everybody. You can get it from Amazon. You can get it as an actual bookity book printed on paper, not on metal, but on paper. You can also get it in Kindle. You can get the audiobook. You can get it on Apple Books. You can get it anywhere that there is some form of font on a page for you to read. And I'm going to say it again. It is the best book on Apple I have ever read, because it is not gossip. It is not drama. It is not third-hand accounts. It is not sort of weird looking in on things. This is an actual Apple engineer who was responsible for helping to make Safari and WebKit, and who built pretty much by his damn self the original keyboard on the original iPhone. And it's a fascinating look. A lot of times we hear stories about, oh, Apple's got one engineer in that project. And you're like, what? No. What? No. It's a $1 billion company. What? No. No, it really is one engineer working on this piece of software that is going to be used by a billion people eventually. And sort of his thoughts on how that happens, how they get there, and how they use this iterative, relentless, try it out, test it, demo it, dog food it, refine it, because eventually you'll be demonstrating it to Scott Forstall and then Steve Jobs, and it better be darn good by the time it gets there. So if you've ever been interested in how Apple actually makes software products, then please, please do check it out. It's available now. Creative Selection by Ken Kishinda.
And Renee, this is Karsten. I would like to add that...
Oh, Megan, right?
Megan interviewed Ken Kishinda, and we will be airing that interview this Friday on Triangulation.
Awesome, yeah.
3 p.m. Pacific time this Friday, we'll have Ken Kishinda on Triangulation.
Check it out. He is a wealth of amazing anecdotes. And if Megan got him talking about cars, they could be there for literally 6 or 7 hours. Well, that brings us to the end of another wonderful edition of Mac Break Weekly. I would like to thank Lori Gill for taking time to join us on this roller coaster ride. Thank you, Lori Gill.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I had a really good time.
You can find her at Appaholic on Twitter. I'm going to actually read it off the screen so I don't get it wrong. Appaholic, or at Lori Gill on all the other things. And you can find her at iMore, just crushing all the Apple and Nintendo, and I think Lego now, and a bunch of other delight. It's all the best brands. It's like every, yeah, Disney. If you ever wanted the most amazing, If you were a designer and you had to pick four places to work, those would be the four, and Lori gets to write about them all day. So just go there, check out her work. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. The best place to go for you, Alex, is still Twitter?
Yeah, that's probably the best place to, the easiest.
Alex Lindsay, and he's got a Patreon for Pixel Core going on where you get to be the prototypers, the testers for everything fun that you're
really,
doing.
It's really, there's a lot going on right now. We started Patreon and we weren't sure exactly what we were going to use it for. Like, I was like, oh, it'll be a little service and we'll figure it out. Now we've really figured it out, which is like the place that we play. And so when we're testing new technologies, when I'm testing training processes, when I'm testing other things like that, Patreon membership has become kind of the easy way to do it. And people, you know, have a little bit of skin in the game. It's only $5. And so it just, you know, it's an easy, it's better than for me having just being wide open. And so, but it's not very much. And then we get a nice little discussion. People get to watch me figure stuff out. As we get these studios launching in DC, there's going to be a lot of stuff on Patreon almost weekly that we're doing. Andy and I have been doing our little test stuff on Patreon. And then I'm doing a lot of other little trainings. I did a training on Saturday and I'm going to, or Q&As and other trainings. And so we're going to be doing a lot more of that. So that's a great place to join if you just want to be part of the gang.
Awesome. Is that patreon.com/pixelcore?
It is.
All right. Awesome. Andy Anako, esteemed writer and now radio journalist.
Yep.
Where's the best place to tune into you, Andy?
At Anako on Instagram and Twitter, my blog, which I'm diverting things from for now, but you can see my stuff at anako.com. I'm also at WGBH Radio here in Boston. My next half hour is going to be on Friday. And if hopefully someone will leave behind a new iPhone in the back of a taxi or Lyft, in which case I will be able to talk extensively about what we know about that on Friday. Otherwise, it will probably be about legal stuff and nasty stuff and other cool stuff.
All right. Terrific. Carson, is there a programming note for next week because of the Apple event?
There is a programming note. MacBreak Weekly will be not on Tuesday. It will be on Wednesday, September 12th, right after the big Apple introduction, whatever they decide to introduce. So it will be Wednesday the 12th.
All right. Perfect. So, of course, we love having you join us live. It's just the best way to enjoy the show. If you can't, though, it's available everywhere that you find podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Upcast, just every cast imaginable. You can find me at Renee Ritchie on Twitter, imore.com/vector. I want to thank all of you so much for joining in here and helping me get through this Leo-less show. I believe, Andy, you have the reins next week.
Yeah, and I got the inside scoop on next season of Project Runway. So we're going to be talking about that with one of the co-producers of the show. But we are reserving, inside of the Picks of the Week segment, we are going to be reserving 10 minutes to talk about anything that Apple announced during the event. So don't worry. Project Runway mostly, though. I've been working on that for about 3 months now.
Or whatever phone Andy finds in the back of his Lyft. Either one. You never quite know. Thank you all for joining me. And now break time is over. Back to work. Saddest ending in podcasts.